True Stories Podcast. My name is Kit. Some listeners might have heard my voice as the co-host of the Forgotten News Podcast. And if you are a fan of that show, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. But I am mentioning that simply in order to be clear that the other show will be continuing with me, and that this show is a new podcast with an entirely different format. So, okay, with that little clarification out of the way, I am going to start by thanking all of you for being nice enough to listen. I truly appreciate it, because I know that it is very common for listeners to skip over the first episode of a new podcast and to instead begin with the second or third or some other random episode. But your reward for listening to this, my first episode, is that you will not only get to hear a short description of the overall concept for the show, but you will also hear a really interesting mystery story. And that brings me to the basic blueprint for the show, which I will explain very simply. This is a podcast which will tell stories of true crime, unsolved disappearances, wild adventures, weird mysteries, spooky things, funny things, and also stories that listeners ask me to tell. And all of it will be told in whisper. Some listeners may already know that there are channels on YouTube which tell whispered stories of true crime and mystery. But as far as I know, there is no other podcast which tells these stories in whisper. Now, I am aware that some people do not like hearing true crime or mystery stories being told in whisper format. And if you happen to be one of those people, I'm sorry. So, before you listen any further, I will strongly suggest that you simply go and find a different podcast to listen to. I'm giving you this warning now because I prefer not to see any messages, emails, or reviews that say things like that regarding the format. This is a podcast that is entirely for people who enjoy stories of mystery or true crime spoken in whisper. And for many people, it makes the story much more interesting to hear. Almost, kind of, like you're being told a secret by a friend. And listening to a whispered mystery at night has often been found to be relaxing or even comforting for people who have difficulty in falling asleep. Now, there is one more thing I want to mention in regard to the show. And here it is. Although I will be speaking entirely in whisper, the volume level is up to you. If you think that my voice is too loud or too quiet, the amount of time and work that is involved, I'm going to need to ask for a small fee of $1, either through PayPal or any other secure payment method that you prefer. So just email me and we can work it out. I will give you my email information after the featured story. Now, moving along, I will say that although this first episode will feature a mystery story, the goal of this podcast is to have a wide variety of topics, including true crime, weird disappearances, wild things, funny stories, and maybe even occasional random ramblings from my everyday life. Station. In 1950. master's degree. You may be surprised to learn that at this point in time, Ethel Rose Rogers was only 21 years old. On the afternoon of Friday, November 2nd, 1951, at approximately 2:20 p.m., in the Grace King Hall dormitory building, an LSU telephone switchboard operator noticed that a phone had been left off the hook in one of the student rooms. Then, by coincidence, the operator randomly happened to see Ellen Blankman, who lived in one of the adjoining rooms, and asked her to go upstairs and hang up the phone. Ellen went to the room and discovered it was locked. She went back downstairs and got a pass key from the housekeeper. So at approximately 2:25, she was able to unlock the door and enter the room. And then, almost as soon as she walked inside, she saw the dead body of Ethel Rose Rogers laying on the floor between the closet and the wall, near where the phone was mounted. She was face up with a bullet wound in her chest and powder burns on the front of her dress. The police were called and a careful investigation was made of the body and the room. According to the local coroner, Dr. J.W. Watson, she had been shot through the chest with a .22 automatic pistol. The bullet had entered her body on the side of her left breast, then slightly zigzagged from left to right within her chest, and came out through her back. He said the pistol was found on a shoulder high shelf in the closet, and it contained 5 bullets in the magazine. There was one in the chamber, and an empty .22 shell was found on the floor. The pistol had been on a tissue box on the shelf, or possibly in the tissue box. Unfortunately, different articles say different things. The police also found a leather holster for the gun. In addition to the tissue box, 43 bullets were found in another box on the shelf. The box originally contained 50 bullets. The missing bullets were evidently the ones within the gun and the spent shell on the floor. Ethel was pronounced dead at the scene by Dr. Watson, the coroner. He went on to say that the pistol had been fired recently, and that's why there were powder burns found on the front of her dress. According to first statements by the police, there was no sign of a struggle, but there were some smudges on the gun, and there might also be some partial fingerprints. But scientific tests would be necessary to know for certain. Nevertheless, as reported in a news article published the next day, it was stated by Sheriff Brian Clemens that the death appeared to be accidental. He said, quote, "We are positive it was not foul play," unquote. However, it was observed in the last sentence of the article that Sheriff Clemens gave no explanation of how he thought the shooting had occurred. The investigators initially believed that Mrs. Rogers was loading the pistol when it accidentally fired, shooting her in the chest, and then she put the gun back on the shelf with the box and turned to grab the phone for help, but then she fell down dead before she could. Was this a realistic interpretation of the available information at the time? Seriously, think about it. Could this girl really have shot herself in the chest at point blank range, yet somehow have the stamina and agility to take the pistol, then turn around, open the closet, reach up to the shelf, and put the gun in or on top of the tissue box? She then shut the door and turns toward the phone. And it is only at this point, when she picks up the phone, that the impact of the bullet finally causes her to fall to the floor, where she then dies. Now, if any listeners truly believe that this is how Ethel actually died, well, let's just say there is a thing called common sense. And the official conclusion by Sheriff Clemens does not exactly seem to match with common sense. Perhaps try looking at it through this quote by the late G.K. Chesterton, who was a very smart author of numerous mystery stories. He once observed, quote, "A fact is a thing which can be admitted without being explained," unquote. But in this case, the opposite is true. The official conclusion by Sheriff Clemens requires such a convoluted explanation of the facts that you have to be living in topsy-turvy land in order for it to be true. However, this crazy chain of events was only the opinion of Sheriff Clemens. What about Dr. Watson, the coroner? I'll tell you. He scheduled an inquest for the next day, at which he would hear testimony and review evidence in regard to the death. The hearing began early in the morning, specifically 8:30 a.m., sworn testimony was then given by Ethel's mother, her roommates, the telephone switchboard operator, the students from the adjoining rooms, and also by law enforcement officials, as well as two male students whom she had dated. And at this hearing, it was soon discovered that the gun actually belonged to Santiago Aragones, who was from Venezuela, and he was known on campus by the nickname Jimmy. He had been one of the young men whom Ethel had dated. Jimmy said that he had met her at the Tiger Town drugstore on October 31st. Yes, Halloween. And that after a few minutes of conversation, she had asked him to go turtle hunting with her, and he agreed. Now, at this point, I am going to tell you that turtle hunting was not a 1950s euphemism for, something else. So you're probably thinking, weirdest first date ever. But just wait, because things are going to get weirder. No sooner do they make this date than Ethel then asks Jimmy to go downtown with her to buy a gun. So then they went equivalent of nearly $200 in the present day, 2018. Now, that seems to be quite a bit of money for a college girl to be spending in 1951. In order to do something as random as start wanting on a first date. Ironically, some of the guns that she looked at were automatics, just like the one that killed her. But, in any event, because she couldn't find anything that she liked, they went back to campus, whereupon Ethel asked Jimmy if he owned a gun. When he said that he did, she asked if she could borrow it. He told her that she could, so he went to his room to get it. Jimmy then cleaned the gun and walked over to the Huey Longfield house, where they had agreed to meet, and he gave it to her. He testified that he then saw Ethel put the gun in her locker at the Music and Dramatic Arts building, and that was the last time he saw the gun. He further testified that she had told him that she, quote, knew about guns, unquote. Sheriff Clemens followed up on this testimony and visited the various stores that had been mentioned. His investigation verified that Ethel and the young man had been at the stores looking at many different guns. In fact, an employee at one store they went to told him that Ethel had later returned alone, purchasing a box of bullets. However, this same employee also said that he had seen her handling an automatic pistol while she was there, and that she was, quote, inept, unquote. But, getting back to the inquest, another witness was Raul Montes, who was the other student that Ethel had dated. He was Hispanic, just like Jimmy, so she apparently had a type. However, he was from Cuba, whereas Jimmy was from Venezuela. Anyway, that's not directly important to the story. Raul testified that on Wednesday, Halloween, 2 days before the shooting, he and Ethel were supposed to have met at the Music building at around 10 p.m. for a date, but she didn't show up. Now, be aware, 10 p.m. would have been after the curfew time for the dorms at LSU in 1951. So, Ethel might have gotten worried about being locked out late at night. Or worse, that someone might find out that she was out on a date after curfew and then turn it into some kind of horrible, scandalous insinuation or rumor. But, according to Raul, he had just gotten tired of waiting, so he went back to his room. He testified that he then called Ethel, and she immediately apologized. She told him that earlier in the evening she wasn't feeling well, and laid down, and then unintentionally fell asleep. And that was why she hadn't shown up for their date. So, he took her at her word, and then asked her if she would be his date for the homecoming dance, which was that Friday, November 2nd. And she said that she would love to. Now, it is definitely a also interviews with several female students from the dormitory who stated, among other things, that on Friday afternoon, they had heard a muffled bang, followed by a thud at approximately 2 p.m., but that it wasn't very loud. Law enforcement officers testified that they had found a partial fingerprint on the shell, but there wasn't enough detail to be able to make a clear comparison. Ethel's mother testified, weeping throughout. Remember, this was the day after her daughter's death. She said that Ethel often liked to be by herself, and that she was a model child, and that she had hunted turtles with her uncle since she was 12. But on the other hand, she also testified that Ethel was unaccustomed to automatic weapons. In addition, according to Colleen Moore, who had been Ethel's roommate, she had been with her at breakfast, and that, if anything, Ethel had been in a happy mood that morning. And as far as Colleen could tell, Ethel seemed perfectly fine. Anyway, the testimony and other evidence was reviewed, and it was reported that the ruling of the coroner's inquest was that the death of Ethel Rose Rogers was, quote, purely an accident, because there was no evidence that she was despondent, and because just prior to the time that she was found, she had made a date by phone for the university homecoming dance, unquote. Let's unpack the statement. The coroner is saying that this was not a suicide because, obviously, a girl who had a date for the homecoming dance would certainly have no reason to kill herself. Also, for some entirely unknown reason, the coroner did not consider the possibility that the death was a reckless homicide, such as negligent handling of the gun by someone else, let alone murder. Instead, the coroner seems to have simply rubber-stamped the conclusion that the sheriff had declared on the day that Ethel's body was discovered that the death was not the result of foul play. The unwillingness to even consider this possibility seems strange, especially if you consider the fact that the gun belonged to a guy that she had recently promised to go on a date with. There are other questions unanswered and also unasked. First and foremost, was it realistically possible that after the bullet was fired, that Ethel turned, opened the closet door, reached up, put the gun on the shelf with the tissue box, then closed the door, and only after that, she then fell dead on the floor? Listeners, do you believe that is actually what happened? Honestly, that sounds more like an exaggerated death scene from an old movie or TV show, not real life. Now, keep in mind, we know that Jimmy had lent his gun to Ethel. It is unclear from newspaper Come and Dance is the next Friday. Somehow, Jimmy finds out that Ethel is going to the homecoming dance with Raoul and gets mad. Maybe he's a hothead and works himself into a jealous rage. The two of them have an argument. It gets out of control. Jimmy grabs a gun in the heat of the moment and shoots her. Well, if that seems like a reasonable possibility to you, then ask yourself this question. Think it over. What if Ethel and Jimmy had actually been dating a lot longer than the one day that he had claimed in his testimony? Think it over. Just a little. This is 1951, a very conservative Louisiana. A boy and a girl randomly meet in a drugstore, and the next thing that happens is that she asks him on a date that involves buying a gun to go turtle hunting. Remember, we only have his word that they had just met on that afternoon. Now, what if Jimmy had found out somehow that Ethel had not only made a date to go to the homecoming dance with this other guy, but also that she had been dating him for a while too, all behind his back? Maybe, possibly, Jimmy walked into the room without Ethel knowing it and heard her talking on the phone with Raoul. And he suddenly realized what was going on and then mentally boiled into a fury that led to murder. And then mentally boiled into a fury that led to murder. Now, let's say, hypothetically, Jimmy did fire the fatal shot. Probably then, after he suddenly realized that Ethel was dead, he put the gun on the closet shelf, perhaps trying to make it look like it was her gun. Then, he left the room and locked the door behind him. So that is one theory for the possibility of homicide in the death of Ethel Rose Rogers. Okay, what about this? We know, based on the testimony of the telephone switchboard operator, there was a phone call between Raoul and Ethel at the time of the shooting. This raises the question of whether Raoul heard any arguments between Jimmy and Ethel. And also, if he did not hear any arguing, did he hear the gunshot? And if he did, why didn't he call the police? These are good questions. Even if the conclusions of the sheriff and the coroner are taken at face value, that the gunshot was an accident that resulted solely from some sort of carelessness by Ethel. But remember, their theory also includes belief that she was loading the gun while she was on the phone, and that she made some mistake that made the gun go off. But instead of telling Raoul that she had shot herself, she dropped the phone, got up, then put the gun in the closet with the tissue box, shut the door, and only then went back to pick up the phone. Except gave out, and she fell on the floor, dead from her wound. Okay. Well, that is the official story. Well, although it's not too much of a stretch to believe that Ethel was the kind of girl who might calmly load a gun while talking on the phone, it's not so clear about all those other things which they think she did. Who knows? Maybe it's what happened. Maybe not. By the way, a curious side note to all of this is the extremely surprising fact that in 1951, deep in the American South, a young white college girl was having a romantic relationship with two different Hispanic men. Yet the nature of those relationships was never scrutinized by either the police or any news article. Especially when you consider the fact that this was a point in time when there was not a lot of open-mindedness about interracial relationships in the U.S., and particularly not in the American South. However, getting back to our story, here is another significant question. If the death of Ethel wasn't a homicide, what about the possibility that Ethel committed suicide? Although, keep in mind that the coroner had completely ruled out any possibility that she had taken her own life. He seemed to believe that since Ethel had made a date for the homecoming dance, and because her friends thought she was happy, there was no reason to believe that she would have killed herself. But it is beyond obvious that plenty of people commit suicide despite having good relationships with boyfriends or spouses or an active social life, and notwithstanding that they have friends or family members who think they are perfectly happy. Yet, there can always be some dark hidden thing in someone's life, or some unsuspected sadness or mental illness, which could easily trigger a sudden decision to commit suicide. Also, please consider the fact that her desire to obtain a gun not only seems to have been very sudden, but was incredibly persistent about it, going from store to store. Then, when she couldn't find a gun that was in her budget, she got Jimmy to lend her his gun, and once she had it, she went out again, later the same day, to buy bullets. Unfortunately, there is no way to know for sure. Any thoughts about whether the death was the result of suicide are pure speculation. In fact, it seems as though almost everything about this case is speculation. Notwithstanding the certainty expressed by the sheriff and the coroner. As a side note, one thing that was very sad in researching this story via the internet was that with any search that involved the name Ethel Rose Rogers, sometimes the first thing that would pop up would be some article or articles from the 1940s quoting Ethel as announcing some event on campus or inviting students or the public. Seeing those articles unfortunately, in the present day, very few people have any memory or knowledge of the name Ethel Rose Rogers, whether at Louisiana State University or anywhere else. However, speaking of ghosts, there have been many reports over the years at LSU of sightings of a female ghost in one of the LSU dorms. This ghost appears to be in her 20s, dressed in clothing that would have been typical for college girls in the 1950s. The dorm she haunts just happens to be the one where Ethel died. Perhaps it is Ethel. Just perhaps. And on that note, we are now at the end of the story of the mysterious death of Ethel Rose Rogers. So, listeners, tell me, what do you think happened? Do you agree with the sheriff and the coroner that Ethel simply died in a strange, tragic accident? Or was it suicide? Or an unintended homicide? Or maybe, just maybe, was it murder? Do you have any thoughts? If you do, you can email them to whisperedtruestories@gmail.com. But take care to type that as all one word. There are no hyphens, dashes, or underscores. You can also follow and comment on Twitter at the handle @whisperedtrue. Once again, one word, @whisperedtrue. Finally, if you like the podcast, including the concept of the podcast, you can help the show to continue on a regular basis by going to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully, there will be a new episode every 2 weeks. We will see. If you have any suggestions, including suggested cases or topics, please feel free to email them. Also, speaking of email, if you would like to be sent an email with alternative volume levels, whether for this episode or any future episode, either quieter or louder, and that you can then download, just let me know. But due to the amount of time and work that is involved, there will be a small fee of $1. Sorry about that. Payment can be made either through PayPal